because we cannot honor you enough, God, by speaking to you. I'd ask you to speak to us. Please teach us a bit more about your word and your history with people. And I'm not sure what you want to say and what you want to teach us, but I'm all ears. I want to hear and I want to hear what you have to teach us today, and give us a greater reverence and respect for your word and your purpose. So, the weakness has always been that we are hard-hearted. We are people who do not honor you as God. It's always been the trouble. That's why you chose the Jews, I think, that in spite of their hard-heartedness and hard-headedness, and that you chose them as a people to shape and mold and draw people from. So, God, there's hope for us. So please teach us this morning. Amen. So, 1 Samuel, or 2 Samuel, actually, chapter 2. Last week we talked about David getting the word that Saul and Jonathan and Jonathan's brothers had died on Mount Gilboa. And we read the dirge, they call it. I thought that was a Scottish word or something in doing it, but I guess it's a Jewish word also. But lament over the dead. Kind of a history and kind of an acknowledgement and a honoring and respecting them for their lives. And you know, one thing that has impressed me in reading through Samuel again in the last months has been David was a man who lived in a different world than we live in. David was a man of respect and honor. And it's something that we as men and we as women should understand, because we have very little respect and honor as it should be. There's a right respect and a right honor, and I think that David exhibits that. And we don't in our culture. We don't know what respect and honor really look like. We've lost it, and as a result, you know, we've become dishonorable, unhonorable men. You know, the things that have changed pretty radically in our culture. You know, it was amazing to watch kind of the women's lib movement happen as I was a kid, and I really didn't understand. It was perplexing, you know, in high school and you know, the 70s and in the beginning of college, and the whole women's lib movement started, and it was baffling to me, because I grew up, women were honored. You know, women were respected. Women were treated with dignity and respect in my family. You know, not just my own family, but in my secondary family and, you know, all the family around me. So it was really difficult for me to understand what women were fighting for as I began to get out in the world, I guess, more and see. You know, so much of that when you're in high school and stuff, you don't see behind the closed doors of homes where women are abused, where men are chauvinistic pigs. You know, I didn't grow up around chauvinism, but I grew up around men that were honorable. I grew up uncles and grandparents and grandfathers and great grandfathers that were hardworking men that you honored and respected. And the women were treated with honor and dignity. But that's not necessarily the case. What was sad, and what to me one of the greatest displays of dishonorable men in a society came as in that whole transition, as you begin to see women say, "You don't open my door, you know. What are you doing opening my car door? You know, I can do it myself doing it." And And women began to say, you know, I'm going to get a job. Two people are going to work. I'm going to go work. And, you know, that was a huge transition. I mean, when I grew up, women stayed home and were mothers. And, you know, the thing about it is, to me, the display that showed the innate dishonorability in men is men go, fine, you can do it yourself. Give me another beer, you know, I'll watch TV, you know. Fine, you can take on the responsibility of working, and so it's not all on my shoulders. Good, I like that, you know. I don't have to deal with that responsibility. And men acted, as far as I'm concerned, dishonorable, and didn't take on what God had called us as men to do, is to carry that weight. You know, the same thing with, fine, you want to open your own door, fine, you want to do it. And it's hard for your generation, for the younger generation, to understand what I'm talking about, because it's become so ingrained. It's become so ingrained, and you have not been around honorable men for most of your lives, because our culture and our society has dummied that down. And men quit acting. They weren't honor. I guess to me the issue was men weren't honorable to begin with. And it's not just about work; it's about so many things. You know, we as men are supposed to be heroes, and instead we're soft mentally and emotionally and pathetic men that are not. David exhibited I think what was right and what was true and what was God. This was a different era where people lived. I mean, guys killed each other. Men, you know, most of us will never kill anybody. And there's a side of that, that's a good thing. I mean, I don't want to ever kill anybody. I'm doing it. But there was a day when you had to kill people to live. And most men, you know, most of these Hebrew men, most of these men living there, you needed to be willing to, and probably were called upon to kill someone. And it was different killing too. It wasn't from a distance. It wasn't pushing a button somewhere. It wasn't pulling a trigger even on a distant target. It was with a sword taking someone's life. You know, there's a lot of things going on, and I don't necessarily want to diminish, but it's an amazing thing that forever in our culture, men have fought and fought wars, and people didn't come back, and the majority of them had some post-traumatic stress syndrome. But I believe it's because they were honorable men to begin with, and they acted honorably in killing. You know, I can honestly say, I mean, it didn't, you know, World War II, you can say, well, they had it, they just know what it was. No, people went off and functioned fine, just like David went off and functioned fine. There was few people that killed more men hand to hand. David killed a lot of men. You know, David himself, I mean, just the 200 he killed for his wife's dowry, single-handedly. And he didn't have distress syndrome. You know, dishonorable men, you know, there was a lot of dishonorable action in Vietnam is when it really started. There was a lot of men that were doing drugs. There was a lot of men that were, you know, drinking. They were dishonorable with women. They were, you know, it was a generation where godlessness crept in out of the 60s. And we had a generation of godless men. That changes things. That really changes things. You know, when you're, you know, and Vietnam was not a war of honor. You know, it was a different war. The people there fought differently too. You know, it was a difficult thing to walk into a village and have a little boy with his hands behind his back, you know, for the first time, or a woman or something, and knowing, do they have a grenade? Do they have an AK-47? You know, I think they do. I think they could put us all at risk. You have to make a judgment call based on that. And do you kill them or don't you kill them? And where do you stand after that? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. You know, and it's a pretty close thing. And unfortunately, I think there was a lot of dishonesty. There was a tremendous amount of drugs used in Vietnam by soldiers. You know, and here you are walking in with a gun, taking somebody's life. You should have a post-killing distress syndrome, you know? I mean, cause did you really act honorably in doing it? We have, you know, at this day and age, you know, I think, unfortunately, you know, our greatest heroes seem in our society to a large degree to be, you know, Navy SEALs or they're, you know, or that special ops guys. There's a tremendous infatuation with special ops guys right now. And, you know, you see the whole tactical thing just taking over, you know, the gun industry and because why? Because we want to be Navy SEALs, you know, doing it. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily a healthy thing, doing it. You know, we got to have, you know, black guns and we got to have our ARs and we got to have our, you know, it's why? Well, the truth is because we want to be heroic, you know, but wearing multicam and having an AR does not make you heroic. And I don't think that we, heroism is not something that you put on. It's not something that you can buy. I mean, it's amazing. You got a tremendous amount of people in this country training tactically as civilians, you know, almost with a desire to go kill somebody, really? I mean, do you really want to kill somebody? I mean, I realize that there's, you know, there's a lot of mentalities with, you know, everything from preppers to anti-government mentality about what we're going to need to do to preserve ourselves and save ourselves and take care of ourselves. And I'm a believer that we ought to be responsible men. We ought to be responsible people. You know, I don't think that we ought to be government dependent for survival. I don't think that, you know, I think that we ought to be men of honor that would defend our home and not just defend our home, but defend our friends and defend our, you know, our families and our extended families and our towns if need be. You know, I think we ought to be men that should be willing to lay our lives down for other people, because that's really what an honorable man is, somebody who's willing to lay his life down for other people. But, you know, the thing that is tremendously lacking in the current heroism, in the current tactical, mental, wannabe heroes, wannabe soldiers things even, is humility. And humility is a quality that truly makes you a hero, because humility is what allows you to be able to put other people before yourself. I would say that most of the current run of heroes and tactical guys they're selfish. You know, you look at them, how are they with their children? How are they with their wives? How are they with the people around them? You know, in the current survival mentality, there's a tremendous selfishness that goes down with it, that lives with it. I take care of mine. You know, I take care of me. Take care of my family. So that's supposedly not selfish, but I think that it's important for us as men to think about and to address, because the truth is, and I've said this to you guys before, but the truth is you need to be reminded when there's a lot of kids here right now, you know, I don't know how many were here this morning, but there's a lot of them. And when they walk in here, they should see their heroes. I mean, we should be the men that they look up to, that they want to be like when they grow up. Most of us that grew up in church didn't grow up with those men. Most of us grew up with a bunch of soft, pudgy, pathetic, religious men that we grew up with. When we walked into church, we didn't see our heroes. And it should be. And it doesn't mean because we killed somebody or because we killed people or, you know. It should be because we have a heart that's willing to lay its life down for other people. And I would say that, you know, all of us believe, I think as men, all of us would take on some in this room of saying, if somebody busted through my door, came in at night, I would be willing to kill them. I would be willing to defend my home. I would be a hero. That's not what being a hero is. Being a hero is you lay your life down in times of peace. You lay your life down when you don't have to. You regard others as more important than yourself. You regard your family as more important than yourself. You regard your wife as more important than yourself. You lay your life down for your wife every day? Because if you don't, you're not a hero. And honor is something that, you know, I would ask you guys to immerse yourself to the level in David's life that you get a different sense of what honor is. I mean, David just did this. He just talks about his, in a sense, most dreaded enemy, Saul, with honor. Right? I mean, this dirge says, you know, they were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul. And he speaks about him clothing him in chapter 1, you know, how the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. You know, he honored his enemies. Honoring your enemies. You know, that's a huge deal that we should understand. We typically understand men of the flesh, you know. It's easy to, we've all thought about killing somebody or being willing to kill somebody, right, that we really didn't like. Even you women have thought that, right? You know? Don't tell me you haven't, because you have. You know? And you know, and as men, it's pretty easy to think about wanting to kill somebody that we can't stand or we disdain. But how about somebody that you honor? How about, you know, it's a different mentality, because you do what you have to do. You do what you need to do. There's a difference between having remorse and regret for killing somebody and having tremendous sorrow and being broken over it. You know, David was broken over the fact that Saul had been killed. David was, you know, and yet that was the nemesis in his life. I mean, it just made his life terrible because of Saul's actions and Saul's fleshly attitudes, and yet he honored him. You know, what does it mean to be men of honor? We all want to be heroic. We all would love to put on our tactical stuff and grab our ARs and join together and go fight something. But how do you live? How do you act at work when nobody sees you? Are you an honorable man? How do you act at home when nobody sees you? Are you an honorable man? Is that where you act with dignity and honor? You know, because if you don't there, then you're not an honorable man anyway. You know, I think that there is a responsibility to be honorable men. And, you know, men that are willing to fight. You know, I've said it to you guys before, but I'll say it again. You know, our contemporary, one of the great weaknesses in our churches, we tend to, you know, it depends on what kind of church, what denomination, but we elect or we vote on elders. Elders are the one point of authority within a church. I am an elder. Not just because I have gray hair, but I'm an elder who is a teaching elder. And elders are in all societies. There's a few other elders here today, you know. But they aren't necessarily biblical or church elders, right? Elders in society have always been, besides us, people who were honored, people who were looked up to, men who acted with respect, men who the children and men who the younger men looked up to and respected, and they acted respectably. Not always, obviously. But they were somebody, the elders of a town were the men who were honored and held to. We've changed radically in our culture in that we don't honor our elderly. Right? We're very arrogant as youth. Our youth is so, you know, our physical prowess, our the fact that we can manipulate one of these really well, and these old people, they kind of stumble with it and struggle with it and don't quite know how to use it. And they're just kind of dumb old people that are need to go die somewhere, you know? Put them away, because we're the youth. We're the ones that know. We're the ones that are progressive. with a radical change in technology these days. I mean, it's changed really quick. And, you know, because we can manipulate Facebook and manipulate, navigate our way through these things well and through computers well, it gets very arrogant. I deal with it all the time. It's a very arrogant, what would I say, field. You know, tech guys, computer tech guys right now it's bad. You know, they're smarter and better and sharper than anyone because they can manipulate this world very well. You know, most of them are stinking little geeks you just want to beat and need beating and didn't get beaten enough. But they're not better people because they can manipulate these devices that go on, you know, doing it because they're tech savvy. There is truly more to life, but we've seen that a youth that doesn't honor the elderly. And the truth is, have we been honorable men as elderly men? You know, the bumper sticker that says that the epitome of us, right, is seniors, is older people that says I'm spending my children's inheritance. Well, you selfish butthead, why don't you go drive off a cliff somewhere and at least leave something before you die? You know, it's a mental, you know, I as a grandkid, what is the absolute statement in our culture of what grandparents' responsibility is? Spoil the grandkids, right? What a wicked thing. What a wicked statement even. That I would spoil my grandchildren? I mean, that's not honorable. That's selfish. There's one reason why you spoil your grandkids. You know why? So they'll think you're cool. So they'll like you. So they'll want to go to your house. Right? But that's dishonorable. Your parents have to, the parents of those children have to live with that child. And try, they're doing their best to keep their child, if they're good parents, from being spoiled, from being little brats, from thinking the world revolves around them. And they're the most important part of the universe. Because it's not true. They aren't the center of the universe and it revolves around them. You know? They're, in God's eyes, they're invaluable and Jesus died for them. There's no doubt, but that's what gives them value. Not because they were born on this earth. Not because of the grandchild, my grandchild, you know. I mean, the most important thing we can do is impart wisdom, is impart teaching, is impart, and be honorable men, be honorable grandparents. You know, it's no doubt. Most kids look at grandparents, they go, well, you guys are just a bunch of selfish old people doing what you want to do. You're not even contributing to society, you're just taking it. Well, I deserve it now. I can just take it. I can just go play golf, be hedonistic, and do whatever I want to do, right? I deserve it. Oh, really? Is that what you're telling your... I mean, we don't deserve it. God calls us to pour our lives out till we die. Okay? And hopefully you've done it well enough where you're pretty empty by then. Okay? It's not a matter of me being now in a position where I'm old and I should be honored. Because I should be the greatest servant of all. Here we have David living in honor. I throw that out to you because in our culture, we aren't going to get a right idea of what it means to be honorable. You know, what do we say is honorable? Well, they've got one of those jets over there. They've got a whole bunch of money. They've got a couple houses here. You know, those are the people we honor. And it is in our culture, in our society. And they might be honorable, but they quite likely may not. Okay? The truth is, you don't end up with that much more than everybody else by being all that honorable. You know, the rags to riches, you know. I'm a J.R. Simplot. He's the epitome of rags to riches. You want to go talk to any farmers in southern Idaho generationally and see what they think of J.R. Simplot? Because they will not speak highly of him on doing it. Why? Because there isn't that much gold laying on the ground that we just happen to be lucky enough to find, right? You tend to take from other people and do it, you know, to get there. And is that honorable? And now we live in a society where we can do it on a computer, right? So I spend my life taking from other people here, so I don't have to even look them face to face. I don't even have to face them when I take their ranch or take their money or take what's due them. And so we can be honest, you know, what do I do for a living? Well, I buy the grain on its way to the market. Well, so the farmer raised it and the farmer did it, but I go buy it. Why? Who are you to go? I buy it and then do what? So how do you help the rest of us? I don't. I just buy it and then sell it for more money. Why? So your bread costs more money. But I don't care. I have the money to go buy it and sell it for more money. You know? We call it commodities trading. Doing it. I mean, am I arranging trucking? Am I giving the farmer the money to be able to invest? You know, those are different things, you know, where I'm being productive part of the process. But the fact that I can just take, because I have the money, I can just take and make things cost more for everybody else because I'm the smart guy, right? And if I'm, it's gotten to the point where if you're subsistence living, that's not honorable. In our culture. If you are just making it, if you are living paycheck to paycheck, we say that's dishonorable. Really? Really? What are we doing? What are we here for? You know? I mean, I would challenge you guys, because again, our thing, we are honorable if we have money in the bank, right? We're honorable if we have lots of things. And that's who we look up to, and that's how we respect, and that's what we put honor. And that's what we strive for, and that's what we want to get to, and that's what we go after. I could just challenge you guys to look at that. What is honorable? And how are we honorable people? Let's read chapter 2. And you'll have to excuse me in chapter 2 because there's a lot of names that are tough. So hang with me as I stumble and bumble. Chapter 2, then out afterwards. So after David, after he heard that Saul had died, after he'd heard that, you know, he'd been killed, his sons had been killed and his best friend had been killed. After he heard this is a pretty tough time. Remember, and David had been through just rough years, man. Just rough years in the desert. Came about afterwards that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. So David said, where shall I go? And he said, to Hebron. Did you hear that exchange? You know? Isn't that what we all look for? Does God do that? Yeah. Does he want to do that? Yeah. Who does he speak to? To honorable men and women. And by honorable, again, what we have... Selfish, the willing to selflessly sacrifice your life and give your life. That's what honor is, when you put it. You know? What is a hero? A hero is somebody who's willing to lay his life down for other people. To do what? That's kind of like agape love, to regard others as more important than himself. Not because of the accolades, not because of the purple heart, not because of whatever, just because it's the right thing to do at the time. It's a necessary thing to do. And again, we all think we want to be heroes. We want to go in and fall on the grenade, right? I mean, we'd kind of be willing to do that, right? Come on. Who is it? Is anybody going to admit here they wouldn't be willing to go fall on the grenade? We don't want to admit that, would we? Because you'd be a pathetic, cowardly man, selfish man. You wouldn't be willing. No, I would do that. Of course I'd fall on the grenade. Oh, really? Would you regard your wife as more important than you on a daily basis? You're not a hero. If you're not. You know, we want to do things that are look heroic so we can be honored by people and be called a hero. We want to get the dress and buy the guns and, you know, put the hat on, get the badge. But are you willing to selflessly lay your life down for people? Because that's what true heroism is. God wants to speak into our lives. But let me just say this. He does not speak into the lives of selfish men. Because selfish men do not honor God. And God does not speak to men who do not honor him. That's a big statement. And if he does speak to men who do not honor him, you don't want to hear what he has to say. Because it is not going to go well. Do we want to hear the voice of God? Do we want to ask God, shall I go up to the city of Judah and have God answer us? Become a selfless man. Become a selfless woman. So David went up there. He and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. And David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. Then the men of Judah came and were anointed David king over Judah. That's a cute little statement right there, right? I mean, here David has been marching around as a renegade rebel hiding out in caves, right? All of a sudden, boom, the men of Judah came up there and anointed David king over the house of Judah. That's the whole southern part of Israel on doing it. That's going to kind of change his life. Hebron is where he lived. He ruled from Hebron for 7.5 years. You know, that's interesting. It's the highest place in Palestine. You know, that's not all that high, but relatively speaking, since the Dead Sea is below sea level or something, you know, I guess it's pretty high. It's just over there's 3,000 something feet, you know, doing it. So that's a pretty high climb above. You know, if you look up here, we're sitting at 6. If you look at some 9,000 foot hills, they're pretty high. You know, boulders are standing up there pretty good, you know, doing it. So he was, he took all his family into cities. There were cities. They'd been established for a long time. They were more than just tents. These cities actually had buildings that were built. They anointed him king. And David told David, it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul. Remember, these men went and took his body. Said we read a few chapters back. They cut his head off. They cut Saul's head off and took his body and they nailed it, hung it from the wall of the city, took his head and hung it there. And these men, out of honor, went there, took the head down. Now, remember, that those were their enemies. These guys from Jabesh Gilead, it's interesting because there's an interjection here that you wonder, why does the Bible talk about that? Because David says to him, he sent messengers, the men of, and said to him, may you be blessed of the Lord because you have shown the kindness to Saul your Lord and have buried him. And now may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you. And I also will show the goodness to you because you have done this thing. Now therefore let your hands be strong and be valiant. For Saul your Lord is dead and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. The next statement starts with but. What you need to realize is that these guys almost assuredly fought right next to Saul. These were brave men. These were the real deal. These were brave men. These are men that went in that night. The Philistines had just killed Saul and all his guys, right? Then they went to the middle of their city with they were all there and all hanging out and they went in there boldly and took the bodies off the wall and marched away. That was potential wreck waiting to happen. You know, things could have gone really bad. But as honorable men, as brave men, they went in there, risked their lives to do what? To do an honorable thing. Because they dishonored Saul. Now, why would David be so happy with that? I mean, Saul, most of us don't wish such things on our enemies, do we? Most of us think of our enemies and go, cut his head off and hang up on the wall, man. I don't care. You know, we even think of that as our spouses. No, we would never think of that sometimes, do we? But it's we don't think about honoring somebody that has been such a torment in our life. And David did. So he's such a man of honor. And he said to these people, who these guys remember, they're going to set up, we're going to read here where Abner, who was the chief of Saul's soldiers, is going to set up his stronghold, is going to set up their kingdom, and he's going to set up one of Saul's sons who didn't get killed as the king over the northern part, over Israel, over all the northern tribes. Where these guys were from, these guys from Jabesh Gilead, it's only a couple miles from where he set up this headship, and it's way up north on the east side of the river, of the Jordan River. Kind of east of Mount Gilboa, which is way up north and east of Mount Gilboa. Hi, Natalie. And he's going to set up, they're going to set up their kingdom there. And these guys are their neighbors right next to him. I mean, these guys were part of Saul's main men, almost assuredly. They certainly were part of that deal. And David honors them still. I mean, I'm sure these guys were part of the guys chasing him around the desert trying to kill him. These guys were with Saul, almost assuredly. They were faithful soldiers that honored Saul, that were with him when they were trying to kill him. This wasn't close. The Benjamites lived, basically the tribe of Benjamin in their territory, in their region, was adjacent to like where Jerusalem is, which wasn't that far north, or closer anyway. This was probably over 100 miles north of where he was in Hebron. So sending messengers up there, but it's a fair walk, you know, to go up there to Hebron. And David honored them, though, because they honored Saul. In spite of the fact that they had been his enemies, they had fought against him, they had tried to kill him, David honored him. You know, again, selfless men. Most of us have a tough time being honorable in arguing with our wife. We defend our rights. But you offended me. But you did something to me. But I have the right to hold on to this. And as a result, you deserve to die. We don't quite say that, but we think it kind of, you know. And if we defend ourselves violently and our rights, and what was there? Was David doing this? I mean, these were his enemies. And yet he was a man of honor. I mean, I challenge us as men and women, because it's two-sided. Women don't act honorable in these days any more than men do. You know, just because you're bolder and brasher and more brazen in our culture, that doesn't mean you're honorable. That doesn't mean you've really gotten tougher. I mean, we as men have said, you know, fine, you want to do it? All right, great. I had something I wanted to watch on TV anyway, because we're pathetic, selfish men. I'm doing it. But women, you know, women tend to look more honorable, right? That women tend to look more honorable. Because why? Women tend to be get-it-done people, even more than guys. I mean, you can't blame women in our culture for taking the pants and putting them on and saying, I'm going to get it done. Because if you aren't, I will. Because that's the way you're made. You get it done. You have to get it done. And if men aren't honorable, if men aren't doing what men ought to be doing, but the truth is, that's selfish survival just as much as being a pathetic, lazy butt who isn't getting it done is. What does honoring your husband look like? Yeah. I mean, the truth is, you know, and that is one of the most difficult things for you to do. That's why in Ephesians 6, when it talks about what does a healthy relationship look like, functioning in obedience to God. Husband, love your wives. And that doesn't mean like them a lot because they're so worthy of being liked a lot and so cute. You know, that's not just it. I mean, women think, well, men got it easy, of course, because we're pretty lovable, right? I mean, look at me. You know, but that is not it. Men are to lay their lives down for their wives, regard them as more important than yourselves. And women are to do what? Respect their husbands. And again, the word is phobe. So I would say deal with it. Phobe means fear. What does that mean? What does that mean? That is what a godly relationship and marriage looks like. That means fear because of his unpredictability, because of his wrath, because of his willingness to express himself in his flesh, because he's a scary person. No, that doesn't mean what it means. That's not what it means. But the word is phobia. Okay? And that means that it has to do with honor. And because we don't understand honor, that I will honor my husband. And I will support him even at my great risk. Even if he isn't getting it done, I'm not going to dishonor him. You know, most wives understand pretty well, you know, well, I want my husband to do this and I asked him to do this and he's not getting it done, so you start doing it, right? In the process, men get pissed off and angry and dishonored and go, hey, I'll do it then. You know that game. You know that game. You know how to do that. How to manipulate manipulating your husband is not honor. It's certainly not fearing him, as God calls us to do it. It's not an honorable thing to do, and I agree. Most of the time, too often, we as men do not act honorable, do not act worthy of respect. But let me just give you a hint. It will never happen. We as men will never act honorable because you treat us dishonorably. We'll begin to act honorable when you treat us with honor, even though we don't deserve it. Because there's nothing that humbles us more. There's nothing that puts us in a position to go, oh man, I need to do it. And when you as wives are submissive to a husband, that will change his life. Because all of a sudden the weight's on his shoulders to be an honorable man. Tell me I'm a selfish butthead, just wants to watch TV and that's all you are and you're worthless and that, you know, that all you do is to go do your own thing and want to do it and go, you know what most men will? You know what a man's flesh does? Okay. Guess that's what I am. Oh well. Don't like me? Don't like it? I'm sorry. Guess that's what I am. Treat a man with honor, even when he's not honorable. That doesn't mean you close a blind eye. If you're his best friend, you speak to him. You're his friend. You try to help him. You come alongside him. But be in that supportive role, and that will change a man's life. Change a man's life. Here's David honoring his enemies. He says, I admire you. I look up to you for doing what you did. I know the risk you put your life at to go treat Saul with honor. Even though he is my avowed enemy, even though he has tried to kill me for the last 6 years in a bad way. But unfortunately, these guys from Gilead, but Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, had taken Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanim. And this was within a couple miles of where these guys were, where the Jabesh-Gilead guys lived. And he made him king over Gilead, over the Asherites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, over Benjamin, even over all Israel. They didn't want to give up the power. That's why they were trying to kill David in the first place, right? These guys did not want to give up the power. And so they're trying to make it happen. So Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king over Israel. And he was king for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. And Abner, the son of Ner, went out from Mahanim to Gibeon with the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul. And Joab, the son of Zeruah, and the servants of David went out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. And they sat down, one on one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. You get this picture? So, I know there's a lot of names that I'm stumbling through, so it's hard to do. But here's Abner, the king of Saul's army. And here's Joab, the king of David, here's Abner, the general, basically, of Saul's army. And here's now Joab, the general of, and they go meet at this little oasis out in the desert, right? In a pool. And they sit down, one on the one side of the pool, one on the other side of the pool. Again, it's hard for us to understand. You know, you think of the story of Goliath. I don't know how many of that is baffling you. For 40 days. I mean, we're not talking, well, we hear they're camped out like up in, you know, Stanley or something over the hill. They were on one side of the valley and they were on the other side of the valley. Close enough they could hear each other yell. And for 40 days they all came out and lined up with their swords and lined up with their spears and, you know, thousands of them. And had a little stare down, right? Going, what are we going to do today? And Goliath would come out and go, you're God. I think he's sleeping. I think he's not paying attention here because I think he's scared. Because look at you guys, you're scared. Came out and mocked him. 40 days they did that. There was this side of it. And you look at what happened here, and again, it was just a different time. So here's these two guys. These are both Abner and Joab were the real deal. These were the SEAL Team 6 of SEAL Team 6 guys. You know, I mean, these were killers. These guys were warriors doing it. They came out, sat down on the other each side of the pool. They're looking at each other. And then Abner said to Joab, "Now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So they rose and went out by count, 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 for the servants of David. I don't know what young men, but 12 and 12. And each one seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side, so they fell down together. Well, we're getting something accomplished here, aren't we? It's a different world we're living in. Honor? Yeah. What do you think those men said when they said, "Okay, what 12 we got here, man?" I'm sure they weren't that, "Oh, what 12 do we have we can get rid of, man?" Sit about there doing that, you know? You wouldn't have done that because the contest would have been settled if these 12 had beat these 12 and they were standing there. That's what they said. Let's let the young man come and fight it out. Kind of like Saul and David. Okay, who gives up? I mean, look what the guys did. I mean, they were really bold when Goliath was there. Now, you got one guy, Goliath. I mean, he's a big guy, and he can probably take a bunch of dudes, you know, because he's a big guy doing it. But what happened as soon as David killed Goliath? They all ran. Uh-oh, we lost. The one guy got killed. We lost. We give up. We're done. Same thing. And so what happened here? I mean, they said, okay, let's just let 12 of us come out and fight. And whoever's fight, we will be the servants, kind of like they said, you know. Again, it's a different world. Are we those kind of guys? So I'm sure they didn't send out their guys they could afford to spare. You know, we got some kind of cowards and weaklings back here, and we can kind of sacrifice them doing it. No, that would have been 12 of their best guys rose up and came and boom, fought right here in the oasis in the desert doing it. They seized their opponents and stabbed each other in the fear. Doesn't seem like much of a fight. I would think there had to be a little more than that, you know, on the deal. But again, we're a bunch of soft men. I mean, I'm not saying we should be killers. And I am certainly not saying we should be hard men. We should not be men. We should be men with soft hearts. But we're selfish, soft, pathetic men in our culture. And we shouldn't be. We should be men that are willing to fight. And again, that isn't, I wouldn't want to be one of these 12, but we should be men that are willing to lay our lives down every day in the fight that we're in. Each man seized the opponent, they fell down together, therefore the place was called Helkah Hazara. It means the field of sword edges, which is in Gibeon. And that day the battle was very severe, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. I'm sure it inspired, you know, one of those guys was your best friend. And these guys just killed him. Now there was a bunch of mad, you know, sword-wielding dudes, you know, were running out there, killing each other, and they went to fighting. It was very severe, and the sons of Zeruel were there. I mean, you gotta think about this. These are not, Philistines and Israelites. These are all Israelites. These are all, in a sense, brothers fighting. You know, this isn't fighting the Amalekites or the Gibeonites or all the Ite guys, because they were all bad guys. But these are Israelites. Okay. They were brothers. They were all part of the 12 tribes that God had given him that territory. A little bit of ugly family feuding going on doing it. And the fight was bad. And the three sons of Zeru were there, Joab and Abishai and Ashel. And Ashel was as swift footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. And Ashel pursued Abner and did not turn to the right or to the left from following Abner. They were kind of had him on the run. And Abner looked behind him and said, "Is that you, Asahel?" He knew who he was. And he said, "It is I." So Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or to your left and take hold of one of the young men for yourself. Go ahead and kill him, one of my guys, and take for yourself his spoil." But Asahel was not willing to turn aside from following him. And Abner repeated to Asahel again and said, "Turn aside from following me." Remember, Asahel was Job's brother, right? So you got these two commanders, and this is one of Job's brothers there doing it. And he says, "Turn to your right or to your left." And he repeated and says, "Turn from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner, who was a bad dude, struck him in the belly with the butt of his spear so that the spear came out his back, and he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to that place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still and went, I'm sure they went, "Oh no, this is Joab's brother. This is not going to end well." However, he refused to turn aside, so he killed him, right? But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner, and when the sun was going down, they came to Hill Ammah, which is in the front of Giath, by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. And the sons of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became one band, and they stood on top of the hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the end?" Right? "How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back and following their brothers?" I mean, this was a bad family feud. These guys were related. I'm sure there was, you know, it was fine to marry within the tribes. You know, and at some point they did not just marry their sister, they married within the tribes in doing it. And Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely the people would have gone away in the morning, each from following his brother." So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people halted and pursued Israel no more. Nor did they continue to fight anymore. And Abner and his men then went through the Arabah all that night. So they crossed the Jordan, walked all morning, and came to Mizpah. They were down in an area around, right in Benjamin. They were back down to Saul's country is where they were fighting. This was about halfway between where they were and up in where they'd set up the new kingdom. And just north of Jerusalem, a few miles, is where they were fighting, where they came together and met. "Let's meet and see what's up." They obviously didn't have very good negotiations. But they went all night and crossed the Jordan, walked all morning, and came to Mahanaim, however you say it. And then Joab returned from following Abner. When he had gathered all the people together, 19 of David's servants besides Asahel were missing. That's including the 12. 19 were missing. So, you know, they'd killed a few in that battle. But the servants of David had struck down many of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. And they took Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. That's where David was from, right? He was a Bethlehemite. So they were all fans. Then Joab and his men went all night until the day dawned at Hebron. It's a different time. It's a different time. And, you know, God, it's important for us not just to go, ooh. You know, in our day, I mean, we're soft men and women. And, you know, again, I am thankful and I hope that I never have to kill somebody. And it isn't, you know, being a hero is not being just willing to kill somebody. Being a hero is willing to lay your life down. And I think that we have the responsibility to be heroic and act heroic. I know we do. Just as much today as we did then. That we honor our enemies. What does Jesus say about that? He said to love your enemies. Right? That's a huge deal. We try to use that in reference to our spouse again, you know. when they feel like our enemy. I'm supposed to love my enemies. I guess I'm supposed to love your sorry butt. But being honorable is loving your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, he says. Pray for those who persecute you. I mean, Jesus said, act like David did. Honoring his enemies, but being willing to lay your life down. Being willing to die. I don't think that the call that we have in this day is any less severe than these men had. To lay your life down. I don't think it's any less traumatic, any less heroic, or any less difficult. We are soft. In our culture, we are extremely soft. You know, we have, you know, if it varies about 5 degrees, we're turning the heat on or turning the air conditioner on or whatever. You know, we don't know what it means to be hungry in this culture. We don't know what it means to go walk 100 miles to give a message to your enemy to say that David wants to honor you. And I mean, we're soft as a people. And again, we are called to be compassionate and to the fruit of the Spirit. Last year we talked about the fact that David and Jonathan exhibited agape love. And if you want to see what agape love looks like, there is a good example of how it looks like in real life. Not what the enemy has turned it into. And I encourage you all, I was talking to my wife about it afterwards, and she was even, you know, I mean, it's very, when you hear about the story of David and Jonathan, he says that your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. And how the gay community, homosexual community has taken that and saying, the Bible, see, Jonathan and David were gay. And that's rape straight from the pit of hell. And do not, I again bring it up because I don't just challenge you. I don't know. I want to exhort you, encourage you strongly to face that and deal with it until the first immediate response is not what the enemy has lied to it to be about. Because David and Jonathan exhibited Christ-like love, agape love. That is not homosexual. Okay? David exhibited the fruit of the Spirit, a life of the Spirit, which is love, which is not, as we say, nice, soft, mushy, liking a lot crap. It's biblical love. It's willing to lay your life down. It's love. It's agape love, and it's joy, and it's true joy that surpasses understanding, and it's peace, and it's peace that has nothing to do with circumstances around you. That's what David exhibited in his life. David had joy in the midst of an adversarial relationship with Saul and all his whole army and his whole nation, kicked out of his nation. He had peace, he had patience, he had kindness, he had gentleness, he had meekness, he had self-control. And David exhibited those things because those are what comes out of you when you are led by the Spirit of God. But he killed men. But he was a hero. Being those things, having the fruit of the Spirit is not being soft. Is not being a pudgy, pathetic, religious man. Emotionally, mentally, physically. Spiritually. It means being willing to lay your life down. We all know it would be easy to go. It's easy. I mean, I don't know what it is about us. As men, we're innately there. It's easy for me to go. I know this sounds barbaric, but you girls can say all you want. But I don't know any girl who hasn't seen the pictures of squirrels blowing up on my phone and not got a smile on her face or giggled too. So there's just something about it but as men, you know, we have this, there is a side of us that wants to go kill something. You know, that's terrible. No, do I cry when I I have cried. You know, to me, it's a pretty big deal to kill something, but do I have any compunction about killing it? No. It's innate in us, but that's not being heroic. Heroic is being willing to lay my life down for my wife, for my children, for those people around me, to regard others as more important than myself. That's hard. That's hard. But being a hero is not something you buy at Kings. Am I making fun of Kings? It's not something that you go buy somewhere. Being a hero is something that you purchase with the cost of your soul, with your soul. It's something that you purchase by being willing to give your soul up for it. And we don't become a hero by wanting to be a hero. But we do believe that we are called to be honorable men. We're called to be heroes. Again, our kids should not, I talked to my sons about this because this just seems to be part of the culture, and we all had them. I mean, we had Superman, right? And Batman, and I don't know who else we had. It was John Wayne. You know, he was godless too though. You know, we had heroes that we looked up to always, and now they've got superheroes that are these little brats that have these superpowers of some sort or another, whatever it seems like is where they hold on to. And the truth is that our kids desire and long to have heroes, somebody to look up to. But honestly, we should be those men. We should be honorable men that our kids want to look up to and want to be like. Not pathetic men. And the truth is that isn't because we're really good shots or we go kill a bear once in a while or do something. That's because they see the way we treat their mother. It's because they see the way we lay our life down for them. When we're tired, when we're beat, when we're done, when we're spent, when we had a rough day, are we honorable men? Or are we selfish? Do we demand or do we give? It looks different, and God put it there for a reason when it says that these are men of honor that's all sat down on one side of a pool and all sat down on the other side of the pool. And I'm sure they looked across there and said, "That's my cousin, man. That's my wife's brother. This is, you know," and they were, "but what do we need to do? What is honorable here? How will we act honorably?" It wasn't just bloodthirsty, mad, pissed off about life. They fought because they were charged to fight and willing to lay their lives down. And I don't think the heroics that we are to live out on a daily basis are to look any different. If you were men who are not fighting in the spiritual realm, we're fat and we're pudgy and we're pathetic and we're selfish. Because our fight in this world is not against the flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of this dark age. And if we don't realize how they are willing and wanting to trash our families and our wives, we're pathetic, fat, selfish men, emotionally and spiritually. And the charge is just as much. Expect, encourage, support the men around you as women to be honorable men. To think you can shame someone into being honorable is not going to happen. To think you can coerce them or manipulate them into being honorable is not going to happen. It's not. It's going to bring out our flesh. We're going to go fine. "You're just selfish. You just do what you want to do. I'm done with it. I'm going to go take care of this." "Do I get a hall pass then? So I can go then?" You're saying, you know, you're in agreement with me. We're selfish. You treat us like that and dishonor us, and tragically we will be dishonorable. Have an expectation. Treat us honorably. Treat us as men of honor. Treat us as men of honor should be. And it'll produce men of honor. There's few things I will contend with you women. There are few things as powerful to make a man honorable than a woman. And it isn't just because you're beautiful and we want to have sex with you, so we'll go out and fight for you. Okay? It is treating us with honor has a powerful impact on us as men, like few other things. God knows that. How we set it up. There's nothing more powerful or stronger in my life from a human perspective than my wife. With her love, with her honoring me, even when I'm not honorable, with her support of me, there's few things that motivate me and cause me to be act and call me to act like an honorable man than that. You badger, you belittle, you do it. Oh, really? You want to fight? It's a ridiculous thing, women. I'm sorry. You really want to fight? Because that's not a way to win. Let's pray. God, it is difficult for us to... You give us this example of David honoring his enemy, of David being an honorable man. David was anointed king over all Israel by Samuel, who lived north of the border of Israel and Judah. Samuel, who lived in Ramah, which was close to the land of Benjamin, where Saul came from, Samuel anointed David to be king. And everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. Abner knew it. Saul knew it. The Philistines knew it. The enemies knew it. Everybody knew that David had been anointed by Samuel, the prophet of God, the last of the judges, to be king. David could have exercised that, but instead he acted honorably. He honored them. We'll see as he goes on. He'll continue to act honorably in the face of dishonorable men, in the face of men who didn't act with honor. Saul let his emotions run him, let his selfishness and self-protection, let his desire to be esteemed by men cause him to be dishonorable towards God and towards David. David remained honorable at this point in his life, in spite of the ugliness. I ask you, God, to please use this, what seems so abstract to us, that we would meet as warriors. I mean, we have wrestling tournaments, I guess. But nobody gets their spears out and 12 guys, or swords out and kills each other, and then we proceed to kill 300 and some of you. I mean, it's a different world we live in, and it's hard to relate to. It's hard to relate to what honor looks like, because in our culture we've diminished that to the point of having money. We've diminished that to the point of social status. And now that we've given SEAL Team 6 soldiers or Delta Force or whatever social status, we think that's what's honorable. Unfortunately, most of them in our culture are fleshly men. Many of them are fleshly men who just have a tremendous ego. That's not what you call us to. You don't call us to be cold-hearted killers of men. You call us to be people who are willing to fight in the spiritual realm. Instead, we remain selfish and blind. Selfishness is the greatest source of blindness. Do we want to hear you lead us? Do we want to ask you a question and hear your voice? Do we want to be led by you? Are we willing to be obedient? Are we willing to lay our life down? Are we willing to be selfless? God, please use these stories to challenge us. What would we be? Where would we be? How would we act? And how do we act now? Don't let us forget to be challenged. Don't let us forget to evaluate ourselves, to look in the mirror and say, really, who are we? Are we like a Saul who wants to look like a hero in front of people? Or are we heroes? Do we act like heroes when nobody sees and nobody knows? Do we act like heroes in the privacy of our homes? Are we selfless men who are willing to lay our lives down when we're tired, when we have rights, when we've been dishonored by our wives? How do we act? Please, God, cause us to evaluate who we really are as men so that we can be the heroes of this next generation, not because we want to do things outwardly that make them admire us, but because we are truly honorable men. Jesus, I thank you for giving us the ability to be free from our flesh, which is dishonorable. Our flesh causes us to be selfish men. And there's never honor in that. I thank you that you set us free in your death and resurrection, that we no longer have to be in bondage to our dishonorable flesh. But we can live for you as servants of the Most High King, obedient to the death. I thank you for that freedom to live in an honorable way. Amen.